Emo. Emotional music for emotional people. E. M. O.
Hello, what is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode here of Classically Emo. If you're listening to this, you made it through another week of 2021, which is not guaranteed, to say the least. I don't know if we thought 2021 was going to be better than 2020. I can tell you right now, off to a rough start, I do believe, for most of us. But what the fuck ever. It's a third of the way over, right? If I can do math right. No, a fourth of the way. I don't fucking know. I haven't been great at math since like high school. So this is all pretty fucking pointless. But whatever. We're halfway through March. Vaccines are rolling out. Get your fucking vaccine so we can have a summer-ish. Maybe by August or September we can fucking go outside and see a damn concert. I don't know. I could really rant forever about concerts, obviously, but I will spare you the fucking time. I have cussed a lot already. It's been 55 seconds. I literally almost said holy shit, but there you go. In a minute, I have cussed probably more than I have in the first, I don't know, 5-6 episodes, whatever number we're on. I don't know. That's just kind of how I'm feeling today. Happy Wednesday. It's a very beautiful Wednesday. I don't know. I'm recording this on a Tuesday night, so I'm just forecasting myself that tomorrow is going to be a great Wednesday. It may not be. Sorry in advance, or not in advance. I don't know how the hell I'm talking. Anyway, this week we're doing a great record by Newfound Glory. Probably not the Newfound Glory record you would expect for a podcast like this. But as I've always said, there's no parents, no rules, so here we are anyway. This week we're talking about Coming Home by Newfound Glory, which came out 15 years ago. It will be turned 15 years old this fall, which is disgusting in numerous ways, because this record in 06 did a lot for Newfound Glory, but also did not do what they were probably expecting it to do. And Joel Funk joins me this week to talk about this record. Joel and I talk a little bit about that, why we think this record didn't quite take off the way that it should have, because it's hands down, in my humble opinion, of course, their best record. Joel believes it's their best record, which is why, you can probably guess, we talked about this record. So stay tuned if you want to hear why all of our very important opinions are on why this record kicks so much ass. And why it's the best Newfound Glory record. I'll tell you right now, if you don't like sappy love songs that are not pop punk, then you wouldn't like Coming Home. However, if you want to imagine a perfect world where Jordan from Newfound Glory reels in and his voice can kind of start singing a little bit more and the songs mellow themselves out, then Coming Home is right up your fucking alley. Oh my God, there's another cuss word. Whatever. I'm just going to keep plowing through this. I'm at 3 minutes now. I really need to stop talking, because who the hell wants to hear me talk by myself for another 3 minutes? Certainly not I. So thank you so much for checking it out this week. Next week, we've got something very amazing going on, and I'm so excited to share that with you. But that's a whole week away. So for now, stay tuned to listen to Joel and I talk about Coming Home, and then we'll see you next week. All right. Hello, everybody. Again, welcome back here to another week of this shithole that we call life with this podcast. So we've got Joel Funk joining us today. Joel, we're going to talk about Coming Home by Newfound Glory, which is, it's a fucking great record.
Yeah, probably their best record.
I think it's easily their best record. And there's a whole lot of reasons why, and we'll dive into that. But Joel, we could talk about, you know, kind of you a little bit, talk about your introduction to music. I'm kind of curious, was there like a band or a specific album that you first kind of listened to and you're like, I need to listen to more music?
I think, so like my first favorite album was probably, Blink self-titled. I was 10 when that came out.
Yeah.
I got it as a Christmas gift from a cousin as my Secret Santa present. And
solid.
Just, that was like the first one where it was like, it made me want to listen to more music that sounded a little darker than what I was used to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a fucking great intro, like, yeah, to music. Like that is a whole other record that deserves its own, like, whole, honestly, entire podcast series. But that's a solid intro
100%.
To it.
So, I mean, from there and then diving more into it, what, you know, what took you like into music writing? I know like we, like you wrote for me for a little bit, but like what made you want to do that?
Okay. So I have like three answers for my start in music writing. The first, in like sixth grade, my middle school like tried to do a school newspaper.
Yeah.
And they had a spot for album reviews, and I didn't know exactly what that meant, but it sounded like something that would be fun. So I just wrote about I want to say The Young and the Hopeless. So I was like, I'm going to write about this album that's been out for, I don't know, 3 years at this point, yeah. 4 years. Yeah. But that was the first time I ever wrote about music. And then when I wrote for you, I don't know. I just like to have my, I like to talk. I like to just have my opinion heard. So I think that was what that was. And then when I got more serious about it, I really did it for selfish reasons, right? Like, I just wanted to be able to hear shit first.
Yeah, sure.
That meant I had to, like, spit out some words about it. I could absolutely do that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a perk, like, I didn't really realize. Honestly, it took me probably, like, a year or a year and a half to, like, realize, like, that I had the ability to hear new music first, that I didn't have to wait for it to fucking get leaked, right? Or like,
oh yeah, 100%.
Like concert tickets, too. Like that was a thing. Like I remember the first time I ever realized that was Mike from Earshot Media hit me up and was like, hey, like, and this was when he was working with the band Sharks and they were going on tour with Social Distortion. And I had already bought tickets to that show. I was like, yeah, I'll fucking go see Social Distortion. And then he asked me like, hey, do you want to interview this band? I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And he's like, you need tickets? I was like, the fuck do you mean? Do I need tickets? We're
like, I already bought them. Come on.
I was like, come on, man. I already bought them. And then that's when I realized, I was like, oh, this is a thing. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So it's weird, man. That was a thing that I was like, oh, I definitely need to keep doing this now. Like,
oh, for sure. Once I knew I could get what I wanted sooner. I know that sounds awful. It sounds so awful. But like, when I think about like writing about music, I'm like, do you like, I love talking about it, but I'm like, do you really need to hear what I have to say about it? Like, is what I say really going to impact you and your decision to listen to it? Probably not.
I know. Yeah, it's weird, man. It's you know, obviously music, the music industry is what, I mean, we might as well get like albums in advance or like sometimes like tickets to concerts because we don't really get paid. So like, you know,
yeah,
what? Like,
absolutely.
You got to take it from where you can fucking get it, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, what have you been doing lately? I mean, I know, aside from obviously all the hell that's going on around us, what have you been up to the past year, year and a half, or really like writing-wise, music and all that?
Okay, writing-wise, I hit like a really good stride at the beginning of last year.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of dipped because, one, I stopped like paying attention to a lot of what was newer.
Yeah.
Because I was like trying to find as much comfort as I could. And I think at this point, I almost exclusively write about like the front bottoms.
Yeah.
So like when I am writing about music, it's like, here's five ways these two idiots from New Jersey made me smile today.
Yeah.
Like, but other than that, I've been doing a whole lot of nothing. Absolutely nothing. Just like trying to not go insane. I bought a guitar back in April.
Nice.
That just sits in the corner of my room because I was like, this is harder than I thought it would be. And I don't know if I should have been trying to teach myself how to play guitar. But yeah, it's been a whole lot of nothing. Yeah.
A whole lot of nothing. Yeah, fuck it. I mean, time is nothing but just an illusion, right? So whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter.
Did you ever watch The Good Place? It's very Jeremy Bear-y.
I did, yeah.
Like,
I did.
I feel like we're in March, like we're in March 2021, but like, did we ever leave March 2020?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, no.
Absolutely
no, yeah.
not. This is just been, especially not with Texas opening up. Just like,
yeah, oh man.
Sick.
Yeah, sick. It's hilarious, right? It's, yeah, man, I actually, that reminds me, I really want to, like, rewatch that show. And so I watched that show, not to just dive into this good place, but, like, I watched that show for the first time a few months ago, and I just binged right through it, right? And, like,
yeah. It's hard not to.
It's so good, and I like. So I watched the first season. Obviously, like the it kind of twists and everything at the end. And I was like, oh, that was pretty good. And then I was like, all right, so what the fuck do they do now? I was like, you just turned it on its head. So what do we really do? And then the second season, then they turn it on its head again. I was like, all right, now what? Like, how do you keep doing this? And then they did it.
Yeah,
you
know, like absolutely.
4 or 5 seasons. Like, it's just, and they ended it before they ran out of shit to twist, I think, which is probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel, well, I guess maybe one little last thing about The Good Place, but like, I just feel like someone keeps hitting the reset button for Derek. Like, he just keeps getting reset. And we're just living the same day over and over again.
Yeah. We are Derek. Yeah, the world is collectively Derek.
Oh, yeah, we're definitely not Janet.
No, we are.
we are not
just Derek's.
New Zealand.
We are Derek's
Janet.
In a Janet world.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a fucking tweet. That's a great tweet for us. man, so we'll dive into. We'll switch gears from The Good Place into Coming Home. That's a terrible segue, but whatever.
Right.
You know, Coming Home. Did you listen to this record when it came out in 06?
I listened to It's Not Your Fault a ton because it was unescapable.
Yeah.
And I listened to Oxygen. Mm-hmm. But like I had downloaded it off of LimeWire, so it was like a live version only that I heard for years.
Yeah.
but no, I did not.
That's a very 2006 like a LimeWire is a very 06 way of like listening to this record, right?
Absolutely.
And
I mean, it feels appropriate. As
it does.
But like, it just feels appropriate to have stolen it and gotten fucked with a live version.
Yeah, that's the risk you ran. Like, you're like, oh, I'll steal it, and then you get some really fucked up version that doesn't make sense, right?
Yeah.
Like,
at least it wasn't Bill Clinton. So
at
like,
least it was.
I'm good.
I know. Yeah, you didn't get gypped that fucking bad, man. I mean, that was the shit in 06, and. You know, I think there's so much about this record, and I mean, it came for them when they were just fucking on top of the world, right? I mean, this was probably when they were probably the third or fourth biggest like pop punk band, right? I mean, you would think at this time you had obviously Green Day, Blink. Yeah. I mean, Good Charlotte was still riding Sky High, and then Newfound Glory, right? I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd put them right up there. I mean, I might, as awful as it sounds, like throw Simple Plan in the mix. But
yeah, I mean, yeah, like, I think. Oh yeah, like
they might edge out Newfound Glory for me, but.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Because they Simple Plan had bigger radio hits, or they had more radio hits. I mean, My Friends Over You was like, oh, you know, made its mark.
Yeah.
But Simple Plan had Addicted, I'm Just a Kid, Welcome to My Life. I mean, yeah, they had a handful more.
Yeah.
But this, you know, for them. For Newfound Glory, they had 2 top 5 records at this point. So you went into Coming Home, and then, I mean, everyone wanted another pop punk record, right? I mean, that's kind of what you wanted. But 06 was when like that shit really started to die off, right? I mean, it wasn't really big on the radio. Yeah, they did, you know, and they wanted to do something different. I know they had said that going into it. I mean, that it was going to be a mature record, and I think they tried to warn people that it was going to be something different, you know, musically, lyrically, and then I don't know. I guess people did not. People still somehow weren't fucking ready for it. I guess.
Yeah, I wonder how much of it like was they weren't ready for it, and how much of it was like, this is. Like a weird transitional period in what like radio rock sounded like, right? So like we're going from like just like Blink and like Green Day being huge to like now Green Day is super political, like they're newly political, right?
Yeah.
Like it's been 2 years. Green Day was just like, so they're weirdly political, music's getting much heavier, what's being like listened to by kids shifted from being so goofy to like My Chem was on top of the world here. So like this record, sure, it's like super mature for Newfound Glory, but it just came out at such a weird time where it was like all in on one style or nothing.
Yeah. This record, I think this record, you're right. I mean, it was such a weird place, like radio wise, what people were listening to wise, and this record didn't really have a place in that, which is unfortunate because, like I said earlier, it's their best record. And, you know, I think. again, I think another thing that people really should have seen it coming was just, I had obviously wanted to bring it up because they worked with Tom Paranzino, who was just a dude that, like, I don't really know how that happened. I was looking it up. I know he reached out to them, which blew my fucking mind because dude had worked with Tom Petty, Ozzy Osbourne, Bruce Springsteen, but he heard a demo of On My Mind. It was like, I want to do this record. And then that was that. Yeah. So I mean, think
that's the song to sell you for sure. So
that's the song to sell you on, man. I mean, that was like such an interesting thing because he brought in all these heavy hitters. I think you'll bring it up later, like for specific songs, like all these dudes that like were just no diss to Newfound Glory, but like probably like out of their league originally, right? I mean,
right.
At this point, imagine, they were fucking pop like, punk band. Like
that's insane. Imagine having On My Mind being the song that gets you like the team you're working with and then like not releasing it as a single. Just just being like, no.
Yeah. No. Yeah, man, I think that's yeah, the Geffen fumbled the fucking bag. And this was I think at the tail end of Geffen too, right? Like Geffen like got sold like a year or two after this.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, I mean it it sold like in hindsight, it sold 80,000 copies its first week, which now would get you like a number two spot probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then it was only number 19, you know?
Yep.
And I don't really like, I know they kind of blame Geffen for that. And I think that's honestly probably fair because it is what it is, you know? And it's also a weird week, man. I mean, it is a weird week for them, I guess, release wise, because literally the next week, fucking Lionel Richie released a record called Coming Home that sold less but debuted at like number six. So like I don't fucking know.
I mean the Lionel Richie thing is very funny to me, just having that happen at the same time. But I think blaming Geffen makes the most sense. I mean, you can only warn the people that it's going to be different so much, but then to slap them across the face with It's Not Your Fault, like not that it's a bad song, but being like, you're basically holding them by the collar of their shirt and smacking them saying, I told you it was gonna be different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think On My Mind would have been a good first. I mean, even like Hold My Hand would have been a good first single, right? Because that's so an upbeat like pop punky song, you know.
Yeah.
And then It's Not Your Fault was just not, you know.
Yeah.
Oxygen
would have been great too.
Oxygen would have been solid. You know, and I mean, there are three, you know, songs on this record that, what if you go by fucking beats per minute, are, you know, high tempo songs, right?
Yeah.
So you look at Hold My Hand being one of them, Taken Back by You, then interestingly enough, Too Good to Be is on there. And then the rest is like a less than 80. So, you know, they really, I think you could have picked any of those. Well, not Too Good to Be, but you could have picked Taken Back by You, but really Hold My Hand or Oxygen. And people would have been like, okay, well, I'll check this out. And then, no, they, It's Not Your Fault would have been like a solid second single.
Yeah. It's Not Your Fault. It feels like Geffen was trying to like really like dashboard this band.
Yeah.
Just be like, they're like, Dashboard's doing really well, huh?
Yeah. You missed the fucking Spider-Man part of that, right? Yeah. I mean, they didn't get that Spider-Man movie in time for this, unfortunately.
That would have been a great vehicle, and maybe the only good vehicle for It's Not Your Fault.
But yeah, you know what? It's Not Your Fault honestly would have been like solid in hindsight. I don't know if you fucking remember Spider-Man 3, but like Spider-Man 3 could have used It's Not Your Fault, because that movie is not that. It would have helped the movie and helped the song. Like, it would have been a perfect marriage, you know.
I'm just picturing that scene with emo Spidey, and he's like dancing outside of his apartment, and it's just It's Not Your Fault playing in the background.
That's a good, like, we should make that a video and put it on Twitter, right? I mean, someone much more talented than I could probably make that happen.
Oh, but for sure.
That is a solid one. You know, and I think we talked about obviously it being more mature, more mellow. And lyrically, obviously, they were all like relatively happy at the time, I think. Like, they were either married or just like in long term relationships. And then you know, they wrote about that being away from home, and
I think I read that Chad wrote like a good chunk of the lyrics on this, which was like not normal for the time.
Yeah.
Which like that I'm very happy that Chad wrote the lyrics, because didn't they like kick their primary songwriter out for some awful shit a few years ago?
Yeah, they did, and actually some news came out about that today, actually, which is interesting. Really? Yeah, so that was 2014. They had to kick him out because he was charged with 5 felony counts of lewd acts on a child, right? And then like intent to commit like a sex offense, and had child like pornography like on his fucking shit. But today all he did was get convicted of indecent exposure, like. Oh. 7 years later, they hit him with all of that shit in 2014. You're thinking, okay, some of this has to stick. Like, he's got to get something. Yeah. And then 7 years later, like, how's indecent exposure sound? Like,
good
so
God.
I think it's something now he, the rest of the charges got dismissed. He pled no contest to that. So now he's got, I think, probation for a year. And then his felony conviction drops under misdemeanor. And then he gets off probation. So.
God bless America.
Yes.
I hate everything.
That's terrible. Is so fucking horrible.
Yeah.
But yes, it's good that Chad Gilbert wrote
this. Happy to hear these aren't him. Because I was, like, I remember when that happened and I was like, at that time, by that point, I already knew Coming Home was my favorite Newfound Glory record.
Yeah.
And I was like, please don't let these be about a child. Please don't let this be about a child. Please don't let this be about a child. But
luckily, it is not. At least for the most part, it's not. And if there any of it is, I don't know. That would be horrible.
Yeah.
It'd be terrible. I will also say another thing that I really enjoy about this record is Jordan sounds so good on this record.
Like, the best he's ever and will ever sound.
Less whiny, and I think it's probably because he tried to actually sing.
Yeah.
And there is such a large part of me that wants them to do like a proper follow-up to Coming Home, and it'll never happen.
I would argue that the new record, Forever and Ever Times Infinity, is about as close as you'll get to a proper follow-up to this. Yeah, I mean, it's there are a lot more, like, I think since 2014, they've been really, like, really Peter Panny. Like,
yeah.
We're definitely 50, but we're 25. We're 25.
Yeah.
But Forever and Ever Times Infinity was just, like, it was love songs back to back to back to back to back to back. Because Chad, who I think still does the majority of the songwriting now,
mm-hmm.
is in a new relationship, so it's a very much the same mindset. More Peter Panny. They weren't trying to sound mature now.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that you bring up, you know, Chad, because I think for this record, what I mentioned earlier, they, you know, their producer brought in all these guys, and what Chad tried to do on this record was everything. Like, he did melodies on piano, but the dude was not fucking good at piano. Like, he's a guitarist, so he used like 2 fingers and was like, I can't do the rest. So then they brought in a guy from Tom Petty, who fucking did the keyboard, piano, and organ. And it's like, why? Like, where did this come from? Like,
right.
And then
really
you got in.
Into this.
It's fucking nuts, dude. Like, you had Paul Buckmaster, the fucking composer, dude, who'd done shit like in the 70s for Elton John, David Bowie, Rolling Stones, and then has done stuff after that for like Taylor Swift and Stevie Nicks, and he's like, yeah, I'll do When I Die in Boulders, I'll conduct strings, like, yeah, whatever, man. Like, I wonder how much this cost, dude. Like, how much did this record cost, though?
There's
or
no
how
way
much cost
that
Geffen?
There's no way that this has to be the record that sunk Geffen. Like, this is what did it.
This Geffen, is
like,
why
they were just staring at their statements for this record, and they were like, we can't afford to eat lunch tomorrow.
Yeah,
like, we will never recoup this.
We have to close the doors. Like,
we have to side one dummy the shit out of this office right now.
Oh man, that's sad. That's what they did. I mean, yeah, they, it came time to pay up fucking Paul and all these guys. They're like,
they're like, we'll just take the label, actually.
Yeah, what is this? Like, Paul, do you just want to buy the fucking label, bro? Like, just please. And he was like, no, I want my fucking money. Like,
yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, it had to be like their most expensive record to date, I would imagine. Like, just the guys they brought in, and then I guess it wouldn't be that expensive promotional wise because they fucking put all the money in putting the record together and then couldn't spend on fucking marketing it. So,
right,
we have cracked the fucking case, man. We have just figured out where it all went wrong.
Yeah, well, like, I love this record. One, we know it didn't do well. We've talked about it, but just I don't know. I feel like it probably would have done better as a, like, an EP. They could have pushed it as a single. Because, like, I could probably cut about half this record.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I love this record. Love it. But, like, I love the first half so much that everything else is just, like, I will take it if I get the first half.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's because I think it is really, like, you're right. I think it's really, like, front heavy. Like, if you gave me, like, Oxygen to... I don't know, if you made the album closer, Make Your Move, or you move up Too Good to Be and say, I don't know, Take Off. Honestly, I don't know. I don't know what I'd take off before, like, Make Your Move. But, like, if you cut it off at 6, I'd be like, okay, this is solid. Like,
yeah. Well, I also feel like the title track gives me such closer energy. Like,
yeah.
I was shocked at the placement of that. I could stop at that song and be like, that was a complete listening experience. Absolutely.
Yeah. It is, yeah, absolutely. And I think it makes, like, sense, like, thematically within, like, the course of the record, right? Like, when you talk about, like, the record being, like, literally about, like, being away from your loved ones and, like, wanting to get back to them from whether it's touring or recording this album, the whole fucking song ends on, I'm coming home to you tonight. Like, that would have been the way to end it.
Yeah.
You know? Absolutely. And then it ends with Boulders, and, like, I don't really listen to Boulders that often. Like, you know... So you could have cut off Boulders, probably. I would. Familiar Landscapes, I don't really listen to.
I don't really listen to When I Die that often.
Yeah. When I Die is a sad song. I know why it's there, right? I mean, it's about Chad's father, I think.
Yeah.
I believe it's about his father. So, you know, that's an important song to them. But, yeah, I would have... think it could do as good as an EP. And I think, honestly, if anything, they should do, like, a follow-up as an EP. Just for shits and giggles. Sure. Because, honestly, like, your newfound glory, you just did a fucking cover of, like, Frozen 2 years ago. So, like, why the hell not, dude? Like,
absolutely.
You've got nothing to lose.
I'd love a good, like, a good proper follow-up to this where Jordan isn't doing what he's doing now. But, yeah, I don't know. I love the sound of this record so much. Do you think they'll ever be able to, even if they try, do you think they'd be able to recreate this sound? I feel like it was like lightning in a bottle for them.
I don't know. Yeah. I think it would be really like, it would obviously feel like forced depending on like where they're at, you know. I think it's interesting. I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe they could, because I don't want to sit here and assume what they're doing, but I've read, I don't know if you've saw any of this, but like Buddy from Census Feel like did an Instagram post like a week or two ago. And he was talking in the comments about like why they sound the way they do, like how they went back like from being like a hardcore band with those two records to like returning back to their earlier sound. And someone was like, why did you guys ditch that? And he's like, I love those records. He's like, but our fans do not like those records. He's like, the gist of it was, he said he's in like a size of a band, and I guess like Newfound Glory and Census Feel are probably the same size, right? Like roughly that same size, like kind of band. And I don't know if it's the same for them, but he said like he's in the business of like you can only like make a record that your fans don't like so much, like so many times before they're willing to forgive you. And he's like, and if you like strike out twice or three times, like that's it. Like you don't, like you lose your career, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
so I don't know if they're in that same boat or not. That's why they're kind of like, yeah, we'll just make these fucking pop punk tunes and we'll play like two new live on a tour and then that's it, you know?
Yeah. I was going to say, I'd argue that Newfound Glory is kind of like, this is going to sound weird because Weezer is a pop punk band, I guess. But like Newfound Glory is like the Weezer of like pop punk, right? So like, they keep releasing new music and people get excited when they hear they're releasing new music, but do people actually listen for more than the day it comes out.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, I think that's kind of where Newfound Glory is at. And, like, I think the last time I saw them live was that tour they did with Tiger's Jaw.
Yeah.
So that was
interesting, yeah.
Forever ago.
Yeah.
I think it was Newfound Glory, Yellow Card, and Tiger's Jaw.
That what a solid fucking lineup, though.
Absolutely. What a weird but super stacked tour. And, like, Tiger's Jaw being, like, the little opening band. Incredible. But, I will say the majority of their fans were, like, people who you could tell had their mom babysitting their kids. And, like, were in, like, this was – they're young enough, I guess, that, like, we love them. But so do people that – are like 10 years older than absolutely. And they're just doing the same thing Weezer's doing. They're putting out music that sounds like everything else they put out at this point. I will say I'm mad that I have to wait till next year for the Christmas album, though.
I think they are certainly doing that. That's a lot of comparisons, because Weezer does the same thing, obviously, and like obviously much to a bigger scale, right? But like they put out like all these new records, and like people were kind of like, yeah, I'll check it out. And then they're like, all right, whatever. And then you go see Weezer live, and they probably play like two, three songs off that record. And then the next album cycle, they don't play any off that last record, and they do, you know. And like, I respect, I mean, go for it. I don't give a shit. Like, knock it out. You know, if you can get people to fucking keep buying your shit or buying tickets, go for it, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, I think they're in a spot where, you know, and I think they would obviously, they're smart enough to understand that their like popularity isn't what it was 15 years ago, you know? So I think your fans checking out new music is probably largely come and gone. And you resort to being like, this sounds negative. I don't mean to sound this negative, but it sounds like being like a legacy band, right?
For sure.
And, but you've got a fucking legacy. So like, fuck it. I mean, you can't, you know, you gotta love it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is wild to even think of them as a legacy band, but that's totally right. Like, they are a legacy band that, like, weirdly doesn't get the notoriety of the other legacy bands in the genre. Like Blink is Blink, but like, are they, why? Like, are, this is arguably a better band. And like, that handful of times that I've seen them live, I mean, I felt like I saw the band I paid to see live when I saw Newfound Glory live more than I did Blink, but but it's just wild that this band never, I guess, didn't maintain a level of popularity of their peers.
Yeah, absolutely, and I would agree with that. I think they are like a more solid band, and that, and, we, and again, I think this record proves that. You know, I think this record proves that. You know, obviously, if it cut on, who knows what they would have done next, and then you know, they went back and did I Don't Know How to Fight, actually, with Mark Hoppus, right? I think he produced that record. So they kind of, 3 years later, reverted course and said, all right, fuck it, you know what, we'll make pop-punk music. And then it didn't, I mean, this was 2009, so like record sales were tanking anyway, but like it debuted higher, right? Like sales-wise, relatively debuted higher, so you could say it quote-unquote sold better, and the, you know, if you count for deflation, I guess, like, you know. And so, I mean, but also I think that was on Epitaph, right? I think so. Like, Epitaph actually promoted the fuck out of the record. So I think that's where, like, early we blamed Geffen. And I think that's fair, because like, you see what promotion like does for that band, and it fucking did great. So
absolutely. And and it was a team that knew how to handle them too. So like, they weren't just, I don't know, spitting out another It's Not Your Fault.
I know, man, but It's Not Your Fault. I mean, that's one I wanted to bring up with that song, because it's so interesting. I mean, do you remember a few years ago when, like, they accused One Direction of, like, fucking ripping this song, or Hayley Williams did?
I mean, I totally think they did.
Do you really? Like, do you think, I guess, well, it would be, I mean, whoever wrote the song, I guess.
Yeah, I can't blame One Direction. They didn't.
Yeah.
I sincerely doubt any one of those boys brought in this piano arrangement and was like, I have got a song for us. But like, I think that it was a sample that maybe someone thought they could get away with because this record didn't exist. Like, they just, I just can't, every time I hear it, I think that it's going to be It's Not Your Fault.
Yeah.
And I'm never mad when it's Steal My Girl, but
yeah, like, I mean, that song's good. That song's a great song.
Yeah.
But like,
I did not realize the Journeys connection though.
Maybe yeah, yeah, Faithfully. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It sounds like it all sounds back to fucking Faithfully. And like, yeah, they sound like they all three like sound just different enough from the previous one. We're like, okay, you know. But this goes back to the whole like, I don't know, that one YouTube video was like big like 11 years ago of like how all like four, like there's what, four chords in like every song, right?
Yeah.
And like that's obviously relatively true. It's fucking like there's ultimately so much you can do with instruments, especially like piano. Oh, yeah. So
it's similar to like the Lady Gaga Madonna beef going this way.
Yeah.
But like, so you're bound to have the same chord progressions, but it's just, it's funny because like, just because the One Direction boys have like talked about how much they love pop punk. So yeah, it was like a nice little theft.
Yeah, a little bit of theft. It's like when Big Time Rush like jacked that All Time Low song
or yeah, whatever. For
except
sure.
That one was like super like bad. I think that was like, okay, like we did this on purpose. Like definitively like,
yeah, although
it was
like
a thing.
You could tell me that Big Time Rush was never really a band and that it was just All Time Low making pop songs, and I believe you.
Like, maybe that was a secret. I mean, maybe All Time Low was just cranking those tunes out ghostwriting for fucking Nickelodeon, man. I mean,
right, and that's why we got stuck with Dirty Work.
Yeah, that's Nickelodeon was like, these are like the B sides that Big Time Rush didn't
right.
want. They're like, fuck it,
Dirty
we'll
Work,
do it. Yeah,
AKA the Big Time Rush B sides album.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, fuck.
Oh man.
Yeah, That Girl is definitely like a Big Time Rush song, like for
yeah.
sure. And obviously most 100%. Of that record is.
I mean, I feel like Dancing Shit, that's a Nickelodeon song.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You can't tell me that wasn't written for a Nickelodeon band. I don't care if Rivers helped you write it.
Rivers is behind all that shit, too. Like, that dude yep. can fucking write Nickelodeon songs and it's all perfect.
Yeah, pretty sure he writes with a spreadsheet, so.
He does, yeah, he does. Yeah. He does, and that's a whole fucking, oh my God. I love it. What the fuck was I going with this? Oh, yeah, Hold My Hand. I wanted to bring up Hold My Hand because I wanted to say my hot take about this song is my second favorite doo-doo-doo songs ever.
Ever? Okay.
Ever. Behind Sumi Charmed Life, obviously.
Okay. Gotcha.
But, like, that's the number one. And then I just think the hook on that song is too fucking good, dude. Like, it is
you know, Hold My Hand
so
has
good.
No business being, like, it, this was, like, Newfound Glory at their most arena ready, I think.
Yeah.
Like, Hold My Hand is, like, it's a stadium rock song.
Yeah.
No question.
It's a fucking, yeah, it is probably, like, their biggest, like, yeah, it's the biggest, like, song that you could hear, like, in an arena and be like, yeah, this song deserves to be here. Like,
yeah.
it would fucking fill up an arena, like, all on its own, you know?
Yep.
And it's a shame that it doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
But unless they opened for, I don't know, Blink and then played this song randomly, I guess, you know, then you can kind of get an idea of how it fucking sounds. But
right.
I think Hold My Hand specifically is like where you kind of really tell, like we mentioned Jordan's voice earlier, I think that's where you really kind of fucking tell that he's like singing, you know?
Yeah.
Where Catalyst was like, obviously, like he really like kind of honed in on like that whiny aspect of his voice, right? Kind of almost like singing through his nose, you know?
Yeah.
And then Hold My Hand is where you're like, he doesn't.
So much. Like,
yeah.
I regularly would mock the way he sang, but like, I don't know if I've told you, not to switch gears for a second, but with Catalyst, I was trying to impress a girl that I met on MySpace. So,
nice.
Yeah. And somehow, like, got her phone number through, like, messages. We were talking on the phone. She lived like an hour away from me. I don't even know how I met this girl on MySpace, but I called her on the phone and told her I wrote a song for her and then sang Catalyst. First of all, told her I wrote a song for her, then I sang Catalyst, like the title track.
Nice.
Which, imagine trying to win someone over with that chorus. Just like telling them that they're the crux of all your bullshit. And I was like, yeah. I wrote this song for you. It's about how you're the worst person to ever exist. But yeah.
That's, man.
Yeah.
How'd that work out?
I mean, we never spoke again. Never again. I don't know if it was like mutual embarrassment for what had just occurred. But never spoke again.
Never spoke again. I mean, that's probably honestly fine. Like, I don't know how you come back from that, to be honest.
That song definitely served its purpose. That's not a song you ever want to speak to that person ever again after hearing. Maybe if I had done Hold My Hand, it would have worked out better.
Yeah, Hold My Hand. You could have done Coming Home. Coming Home would have worked too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That whole thing of being like apart from your significant other, right? I mean, that would be the one to do it.
My long distance MySpace love.
Yeah. What could have been if you would have just sang a different song, you know?
Right. It would have really sucked for her if I came out as gay. But it could have worked for a little bit, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, surprise to her. Yeah. Maybe she's listening to this right now. She'll be like, oh, fuck. Wow, that's that guy. That's, yeah.
Yeah, she's like, that. I should have known he was gay when he sang a Newfound Glory song. When he sang.
That was a telltale sign, man. That was one of them, right? That was one of them.
Yeah.
You could have done fucking Kiss Me, right? That would be another one. Their cover specifically.
I feel like that should have been on this record. Just like re-record it with your voice not as nasally.
Yeah.
That song belongs on this record.
It did. Yeah, I mean, that... I always associate that song, like, with this record, obviously, because, like, one, like, stylistically, it sounds like it came from this... I don't know what came what. They probably recorded it around the same time. I think it came the year later when they did, like, From the Screen to Your Stereo 2, you know? Mm-hmm. But, like, I always associate that song with this record because it just makes so much sense.
Yeah, it felt like it was a... Because it was the only, it felt like a back-to-back single with It's Not Your Fault. So, like, granted, that's because they only released It's Not Your Fault. But,
yeah,
like, the two of them were so close together that I do associate them with each other all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is a song that should have been on the record. And, you know, if Geffen didn't film Boy, who the fuck knows? But that's, that song, that's probably one of their best covers, I think. Like... Yeah. I put that up there as their best cover, I think.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. It's I love their cover of, I think it's Tennessee from like Punk Goes Crunk, which is like awful to think about. But I do really love that cover, even if I have to hear Jordan say the line, although I am black and proud, which like, but it's a great cover.
Yeah,
it's problematic, but it's a great. It's great
problematic cover. In hindsight. Yeah,
yeah, that's like Newfound Glory's career in a nutshell. Problematic in hindsight.
In hindsight. Yeah, whenever you did a cover from a fucking like hip hop band from the 90s, like probably not too solid.
Well, like, I feel like anybody who had Punk Goes Crunk on their iPod should be canceled. We should all
be canceled that we let that
happen. All privileges are taken away from any one of us that that found a way to not only was Punk Goes Crunk like punk stealing from black people.
Yeah.
Then it was white kids in suburbs stealing from white people who stole from black people. It was just like truly the worst, probably the most offensive thing that like the most offensive, not violent thing this scene ever did.
Yeah, absolutely. dear God, just do you remember how that record opened? You had fucking Set Your Goals doing Put Your Hood Up, and then you had that abysmal cover of Got Your Money from Say Anything.
I used to love that cover so much, and it's just Max talking.
It's just him. Man, I think that Wrong really, like that record really, like is like, you're like, wow, somebody should have said no when fucking scaring kids did Notorious Thugs. Like, you probably should have cut that shit out.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it was. Oh God, what a relic! What a
2008. True. Good times, man. Good times. The least problematic cover I've ever on that is probably, and not just because I love them, it's probably I Want to Love You by The Main, because it's just like, it's not a problematic song necessarily, like as much as like them doing Notorious Thugs, you know, like, or Nothing But a G. I don't even know who the fuck did that song, but like,
I mean, the Secret Handshake did I wish. That's pretty unproblematic, I guess.
Yeah. Remember the secret handshake? Lyrically, it's not as strange as seeing a fucking white dude doing that song, right? You know?
Yeah.
But man. Yeah, back to Coming Home, I guess. But yeah, that's a whole fucking tangent we could go on, just punk goes in general. I know we talked about it before we started, but like, what songs on this record? I know we mentioned Cutting It Off like halfway through. Like, if you think of this record, what is like the pinnacle like song on this record that you love?
Oh, for me, it's probably Hold My Hand.
Yeah.
It's like the one I think of whenever I think I want to listen to this record. I immediately want to hear just the high energy of Hold My Hand.
Yeah.
It's either that. I really love Oxygen too.
Yeah. That's a great album opener. Like, it is so fucking good for this record.
Yeah, and I think it's, like, probably, not that it's, like, genius, but I do think it's some of their best songwriting. Like, those,
yeah.
It's just such a perfect song, Oxygen is.
Yeah, I would go with both of those. Like, for sure, like, I think of those songs, those two specifically, when I think of this record. I think If It's Not Your Fault probably is like the third song I think of, just because it was the single. But it's not my favorite on this record, but I love that song to death. You know, and then I think what's so interesting about this record, obviously we've talked about like sales wise and everything earlier, which is what it is, but like, it's so weird because everybody else fucking loved it. Like, their fans were kind of like on it at the time, right? But I think that's generally changed for them somewhat. Obviously, worse than you're talking about it. I think most of their fans are probably still like meh to it. But I think they all at least can appreciate like what they did with this record, what they tried to do at the very least, you know?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I told a buddy of mine that I was doing this tonight, and we've argued several times about which Newfound Glory album is the best album, because he's a big Sticks and Stones guy.
Yeah.
But, like, he hates this record. So, I mean, he might be the exception to the rule. I do think people are just willing to skip it, I guess, if they don't like it. You know what this reminds me of, actually, is Say Anything self-titled record.
Yeah.
Where it was, like, I think people, you either really liked it or you were like, that record does not exist.
Yeah.
It's just...
I honestly, for what it was, I love that record. Like, for what that's worth.
That's my favorite Say Anything record. So, but, I don't know. It's just... And it's interesting because I feel like these were both also really mature attempts at honing their sound in.
Yeah. I think 2006 was such an interesting year for, like, pop punk bands for a lot of reasons. And, you know, obviously the first episode of this podcast was Lights Out by Sugar Cult, which came out in 06, which again was like a pop punk band, like kind of like trying to like evolve their sound, although theirs wasn't as like big of a jump as this. I mean, Take It Back Sunday did Louder Now, and that like turned them from like a pop punk into like a fucking just a rock band, except that worked for them. It actually worked. Matchbook Romance like went from being the pop punk into that kind of like an indie band, and that didn't work. But like we said earlier, this was like that time when like nobody knew what the fuck to do, you know? So everybody tried something and it stuck for Taking Back Sunday. And then I think everybody else did not. Like, I think like every other pop punk band that tried something, it just didn't land.
Yeah, no, it's just, it was a year of transitions. Just like everybody trying to figure out, okay, so what's the next logical move? Because pop punk as we know it doesn't seem like it's going to exist anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's what's interesting though is like if we think of all those records that we just mentioned, maybe with the exception of Louder Now, but honestly probably even including Louder Now, I think this record probably got like the best like critic response, right? I think everybody was like, yo, this is like phenomenal. You know, not that it's like a perfect record, but like again, you take that in hindsight with everything that they've done previously. I think people that listen to it as like quote unquote critics were like, this is a like obviously like it's, you know, you look at their growth lyrically, musically, all that stuff was like the high points of why people thought like this would be their like lasting, like the record that like holds up the best. And I think it did.
Yeah.
Or does.
For sure. Yeah, I think it and I think it kind of suffers from like the paper wall syndrome for Yellow Card, right? Like the best Yellow Card record by far, Paper Walls. It was definitely an attempt at sounding more mature, but not losing what people already loved about them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just a label failure.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the label just fucked it up.
Yeah. Yeah, Becky and I talked about that. And it was the exact same thing, like, a few episodes ago. Like, it's the exact, almost the exact same scenario with this. Like, you did, like, one single, which was Light of the Sky, and then you're like, anyway, on to, like, this is it. Probably everybody got fucking fired, then they just sold it out, and they said, here you go, you know?
Yep.
And that was, oh man. Yeah, I think you're right. It suffers from that, and then it just, so much around it at that time was, like, just so unfortunate. Lights and Sounds came out in 2006, too, didn't it? Lights and Sounds came out in 06.
Either that or, like, it was 06, 07, but it's, like, the same, that exact same window of time.
Yeah.
Like, it was definitely a year of each other.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, because they did, yeah, because Paper Walls is 07, and then Lights and Sounds came out the year before, because they were like, okay, like, we, like, they went, but it's interesting, though, because, like, not to go on to these other cartoons, but, like, these, again, this was, like, in relation to this, where bands were doing just kind of so much different stuff, because Yellow Card tried to do, like, they went, like, the TBS rep making, like, a rock record with Lights and Sounds, and then they were, like, fans were, like, don't really want it, except for, like, the single, right? And then they were, like, okay, we'll make, like, a mature pop-punk record, kind of, like, Coming Home, and then people were, like, nah, like, you know, it was okay, and then labels, like, all right, fuck it, if it doesn't catch on within a week, we're done, and then that's what happened.
Yeah, and then, again, just like with Coming Home, I think this is one that fans come back to as, like, some of the best Yellow Card stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's why I think you mentioned it earlier. It's you either love it or you hate it, and I think that's what makes its legacy, like, so complicated in the scheme of, like, newfound glory. Like, if you only want them to make pop-punk music, obviously you're going to fucking hate this record. But honestly, like, I think they, I don't know, I would be really curious to see how they feel about it now, because I know at the time they talked about it and said, this is going to be, like, our best record. I think Jordan actually said this will stand the test of time. So I wonder how they feel about it.
Yeah, I want to say when I saw them last, they talked about it a little bit, and I don't think they love it.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. I think that, from what I remember, it sounds like I think they're proud of the songwriting, but I don't think they love it because of what a weird turning point it was for them, right? I mean, it's hard to it's hard to love something that you could argue was the death of your most success.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, and I mean, I got to imagine, too, like, because I know a lot of things that are, like, in their personal lives changed after this record, too, like relationships and shit, right? So, I mean, you're probably thinking back. I mean, I think Chad is on his second, I think he's been married twice after this record. Or at least I know he, like, was briefly married to Haley Williams. I don't know if he's married now, but if he's, like, he's in, like, a serious relationship, engaged,
and they have a baby on the way.
Yeah. So if he looks back on this record, it's like, okay, not only was it 15 years ago, but that was, like, two, like, long-term relationships ago. Like, I don't know that, like, like, a how would he really listen to Hold My Hand and be like, I love what I wrote this song about. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
I don't think he can.
Yeah. I mean, I think they, yeah, exactly. It's just, they were completely different people, and it's just such, I don't know. It's so out of their, like, there's no place like home. Like, it's so far out of their, like, comfort zone.
Yeah.
Right? Where they're like, even if we did love it, are you guys really going to want this slow song in the middle of the set?
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you could do Hold My Hand. That's probably, like, about it, right? That's probably, like, the only song you could do live. I mean, I think generally people would be like, okay with that song live, but that's probably about it, you know?
Yeah. Start the set with Oxygen every time.
Yeah, they should. Oxygen, oh, man. You know what? I would pay an ungodly amount for, like, a live stream of this record. I don't even give a fuck.
Yeah,
like, it won't happen. It will not. But, like, they should. This would be the time to do it. I mean, this would be the time to fucking play the record live when you don't have to sell. I mean, I guess you do want to sell, like, virtual tickets, but, like, fuck it. I think I don't know if they ever did this record live, because didn't they do, like, a fucking anthology, like, tour randomly? But
I
don't.
I was going to say, they played it live on, like, 7th Avenue Drop, which was, like, a Fuse show, but I don't think it's ever actually had its moment.
Interesting. I'm going to have to look it up after we stop recording this, because now I'm, like, curious, like, because I swear I thought they did, like, a tour where they, like, said, we're going to play, like, our, like, these four, or might have, I don't know, maybe I'm just making this up. Maybe I'm just like projecting my dreams of like them like doing it. Like, I think if they did it, they did it like once, and then they probably never did it again on that tour.
Yeah, and everyone was like, we don't want this. And then that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I mean, listen, I will just wrap this up with saying, like, I just love this record tremendously. Yep. And I think it's, we've said it before, but I think it's held up well. I think if I wanted to sell somebody on it, I would just say, just fucking listen to it, not like listen to it, but don't like think of it as like a Newfound Glory record, right? Think of it as just like a pop rock record, and then walk away from it and just like see what you think. That's what I would sell somebody on it.
When you're selling it to them, are you selling it to someone who's already a Newfound Glory fan, or as to, or to someone who's never heard Newfound Glory in general?
I think I'd sell it to both of them the same way. I mean, if I guess if no one's ever heard Newfound Glory, I don't have to be like, don't think of it as Newfound. I'd just be like, here, listen to this, like, pop rock record. But, like, if I wanted to give Vince, like, a Newfound Glory, Newfound Glory fan to, like, give this record another chance, I'd, like, literally just listen to it and pretend like it's a new band that, like, just released this record today.
Yeah, okay.
I think you could release this record today and, like...
For sure. It's the most timeless sounding.
Yeah, it is, because I mean, you released My Friends Over You today, which is okay. I'm like, that's not like, I mean, it's like any band from the early 2000s, some lyrics are like, okay, interesting, but like this record you could probably not change much and be like, here you go, and then it would be fine.
Yeah
That's all I would say to somebody.
So I guess if I was gonna sell it to someone, I would probably just tell them to throw it in and just like go for a drive with the windows down. Just like, it's definitely not an album you pay a ton of attention to, but this is great. It's just great, like, it's great adventure music. It's great just, like, living music. It's just good, a good soundtrack, right? Not that this feels like, I guess you could say it feels kind of like a movie soundtrack.
Yeah.
You want your life to sound like a rom-com, you throw this on in the background. It never gets too cheesy. You never have to, like, be worried that you're like, but it's just good. Lighthearted pop rock.
Yeah, that's like a solid way to say. Like, it is really like, it is like obviously it's like a, you know, obviously it's like a, you know, an album about like loving relationships, right? So you throw it on like any rom com soundtrack, or just like any, like, say you take a drive with like your significant other, and you're just like, you know, you're talking the whole time, but say maybe this is on the background. Like, it's a great like road trip record for that, I guess, you know.
Yeah, it's just, it's a movie soundtrack.
It is
what it is. And I think this is my favorite record of theirs because Jordan's not super nasally, right? Like, his vocal production on this is, I would argue, 80% of the reason that I come back to this the most.
Sure.
And I never feel cringy listening to it, right? Like, these songs are cheesy for sure.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But
sure.
It's like, it's the right kind of cheese. It's like lovey-dovey cheese, not like not like I'm 40 but I still hate you and my and the town that I live in, even though I chose to buy a house here, and I can't blame my parents anymore, but I'm gonna try.
Right
Like, it feels the most timeless.
It does, yeah. And the point of the production of his voice, I think it's like, it just sounds their best. Not even like obviously music, but like production wise, it just sounds their best. Like,
yeah.
And that's probably because Geffen broke their fucking bank to pay for the fucking thing.
Well, yeah.
And bring everybody in to do it.
It sounds like they brought in a team that wanted to make a good record, and not a team that wanted to make a good Newfound Glory record.
Yeah.
So.
And that's what it is. It's a great, it's a great record. I think it's a great Newfound Glory record, but if you look at like the rest of their discography, it's not a good quote unquote Newfound Glory record, right? Yeah. For what people want it to be. You know, it's not a good pop punk record.
They weren't focused on like
making a Newfound Glory record, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They were making an album that any should have done well for anybody.
Yes.
It didn't.
And that's criminal. Of all the albums that like came out and like didn't do well in that 06, 07, even like 05, like whatever, like that period of like uncertainty, like this is probably one of those, like, it's probably like, I would put it above Paper Walls as records that like should have like taken off and just didn't, you know?
Absolutely.
And that's absolutely. That. That is that on this record. And if anybody listens to this and still wasn't sold on it, then I don't want to say you're wrong, but you're certainly not right. So
I can't imagine. I can't imagine. I don't know. I just can't imagine not thinking this is their best record.
Yeah.
Just like, period. End of discussion. There is no argument. End of
it. That's it. We could have really saved everybody like 50 minutes of this and just said that and be like, this is it.
Exactly.
This is all you need to know. Absolutely. Well, Joel, I appreciate it. I will let you go.
All right, man.
This fucking great record. If you guys would listen to this hour of us talking about this record, I appreciate that all the same. And if you've listened to this and you don't know what the fuck any of this we're talking about, then I was just putting it on, like Joel said, and just letting just riding the fucking wave and just letting the fucking music crash down, as Yellow Card said, to keep the Yellow Card jokes going, I guess. And that's that. So, Joel, I appreciate it. We'll have to do this again sometime. There's endless records we could do.
Oh, for sure.
We need to do a fucking Third Eye Blind record to save us.
Absolutely.
Sometime. Absolutely. Sometime. Well, I appreciate it again. I'll let you go. And everybody, listen, thank you so much. And we will see you next week.